The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Woo, made it. Welcome in, everybody, to the Wednesday edition of The Drive. That's about as close a call as I've had in a while. I was coming, had to stop by over there at Franklin mm-hmm. Tire, and the traffic was unbelievable.
Yeah, so, I don't know what's going on. It's wild.
Well, I don't know. So I decided, well, I'll come the back way and, you know, come down and turn around and came through up there, you know, near Mike's Merchandise. But there was a truck two cars ahead of me there at the light that wasn't pulled up quite far enough to trip the light.
They don't realize. You gotta pull up.
I finally put the car in park and walked up and scared the crap out of the guy.
Yeah.
But I said, you know, could you pull up just a little bit? And then the light changed and was able to make it. So here we are. I was thinking Dan was going to make it today, although he was feeling a little under the weather yesterday. So they had a big win.
Whew.
Yeah, so we have a full studio right now to get things started on the Wednesday Drive. I'm Bill. You heard Don Dunn. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover also here in the studio. JC, how you doing?
Doing good. Just trying to keep our head above water in this crazy world we live in. It just got a little crazier in the last 10 minutes.
Man, you're not kidding with the news. Michigan firing Sharon Moore.
With cause.
Yep, I saw that as I was at the light.
And and AD just basically comes out and says, hey, yeah. Inappropriate relationship with a staff member. So there you go. That's it.
2 years, 16-8, but he'd been suspended for sign stealing.
Correct.
I mean, there'd been a couple of things that had gone on with Sharon Moore. So it's not the record. I mean, it's a lot of things that have led up to this, but this was the final straw apparently, and Michigan now looking for a new head coach. This is a really crazy. I mean, you've gone through Michigan with another really good signing class. I mean, they've got talent, but they're in the same sort of situation where their players won't be able to enter the portal until January 2nd.
Yeah. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens here.
Yeah, no
when you think about the makeup of that roster, and particularly at quarterback with Bryce Underwood, he is a Louisiana native. He was all LSU before Barstool Money came on and switched out. And he has some ties in Michigan as well. But you think about that, and obviously Lane Kiffin now going back to LSU.
And I think they would love to add
there's going to be a lot of folks on that roster that are getting hit up as we speak right now. So really crazy time for anything to happen, but much less at this one. And you just signed it. You just had a signing class. You just had all these things that just happened there. That now is hey, everybody's open. Those kids will be open right now, basically. once you sign and a coach is gone, those guys are going to have a window as well.
Right. You're exactly right.
Yeah,
There's no question they can be released from their letters.
So it's going to be wild to see what happens with this one.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on that. It is. I mean, the world of college athletics is so much different, Don, than it was
in
a short few years since you were coaching.
Yes, sir. It's every day something new. With the portal, with the I can't remember this many jobs, Jason, and big time good jobs, head jobs opening.
Yeah.
Recruiting has changed so much for high school. It's just a different world, like you say, Bill, that we live in now. Not all bad, good. Still got a good product on the field, I think, but I don't know how these guys do it sometimes.
No, and it is. It's everything about it. You know, you look at playoff stuff, and now you got people yelling back and forth about playoffs and how you're never going to get it completely right.
Well, you're never going to satisfy everybody.
But sometimes you get it completely wrong too.
When you
move teams and don't move teams based on games, and there's no rhyme or reason for doing such, you open yourself up to criticism. That's the first thing. So Notre Dame was in there the whole year, and all of a sudden they didn't play anymore. Oh, let's move them out now. Well,
and the justification was, well, once they're next to each other, then we have to drop them behind.
They've been next to each other all year. It's just part of this sport, part of the craziness that we're looking at, and obviously you're looking at Auburn as they continue to hire coaches, and they made a couple of announcements mm-hmm. again today as they continue to fill out a staff. A couple more spots still left to come, but I talked to somebody today, and they go, how's it going? I said, look, it's a never-ending world. Mm-hmm. Like, it never ends, whether it's watching guys, whether they're going to enter the portal, because even though the portal doesn't officially open until January 2nd, that doesn't stop people from saying, I'm going to go into the portal, because that stuff can happen all the time.
Right.
And now you look at trying to hire coaches and figure out what a staff's going to look like, and then you'll have 2 weeks in January where it's going to be just absolute nuts to see what happens with a roster. And you blink your eyes, and it's baseball season, spring football, and here we go again.
Yeah, Jason, I mean, it's I would think the first week when the portal opens is going to be just insanity, because you know that players are hearing, you know, the ones that have let it be known they're going to be in the portal, they're hearing from people, and everybody's going to want to try to get those players in school in time for the winter workouts and spring practice.
Yeah.
And so that means they're not going to, you don't want to wait until the portal closes on January 16th to start trying to fill your roster.
No, you want to have that as quickly as possible. I mean, I think what Auburn's class is, I can't remember exactly what day it is, the 8th or 9th or something like mm-hmm. that. It's fairly early.
Drew, when do classes start?
It's the 7th, I knew it was pretty early. And so you start talking about the last day to add a class. Will
it's
going to
be 10 days.
Yeah, it's going to be somewhere around right at the end. Mm-hmm. So you want to have everybody in place. So,
yep.
Because there'll be people that, like I said, you need to be in, ready to go, hit the ground running to get players on campus. Probably there'll be people that take visits on January 2nd.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you'll have people on campus then. And so you need to
January 2nd is a Friday.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that weekend, you can count on it.
There will be
visits that
absolutely,
weekend.
No question.
And players that are going ahead and working out deals and deciding, before that first full week of January.
Absolutely. I think that is 100% going to be the case.
All right. You mentioned a couple of more additions. A couple of guys we had, yesterday, Coleman Hutzler came out yesterday, was officially announced today, as well as DeMarcus Van Dyke. Those are the latest two, I believe, additions to Alex Golish's staff.
Yeah, latest additions. Obviously, you look at two guys that, I think you look at Coleman Hutzler, this guy that's been a coordinator, has been at Alabama. He's been in some really good programs.
He's been around the SEC
worked
for a while.
DJ Durkin twice. And so I think that's a big deal when you look at a couple of different times. He can come in. He knows the system. He knows what his coordinator is looking for in players in terms of recruiting. He knows what his coordinator is looking for in terms of how to do things on the field and can seamlessly get in there and know the defense and do those things. I think that's a big deal. Then DeMarcus Van Dyke is young, energetic, a really good player when he was in college.
Yeah, played in the league for a half dozen years.
And now has coached, has recruited at a high level in a short term. And so I think you go good mix of, DJ Durkin experienced guy, Coleman Hutzler experienced guy. Then you think of, Vontrell King-Williams, you retain him, a guy that's young, energetic coming up. The same thing with DeMarcus Van Dyke, two guys like that, a good mix on the staff. And, obviously Brad Davis is a guy that has experienced as well, will be working with the defense as part of this staff, coaching linebackers for DJ Durkin as well, doing some of that stuff, and then see what happens at the safety position, and you'll have the defensive side of the ball pretty much wrapped up.
Yeah, I thought, Wesley McGriff, Crime Dog, today, one of the classiest things I have seen. Don, I don't know, did you see this? Did you see the post of Crime Dog basically passing the baton to DeMarcus Van Dyke, who he coached.
Yes,
really.
DeMarcus played all 4 years at Miami with Wesley McGriff as his
position.
Position coach.
Wow.
And Crime Dog posted today what a great addition to Auburn and a War Eagle and pictures of the two of them together at Miami and then here at Auburn.
Good. That's nice. there's sometimes there's some bad feelings, sour grapes, but in the long run, it's part of the business. And I'm sure he's happy as heck for the young man. And I've heard nothing but good things about all these guys that he's hired. I've been kind of calling around, texting my buddies.
I'm sure.
Yeah. They, some of them still remember me.
Yeah, so
who's this old guy texting me?
Not that I hope he's done or anything, but it'd be sort of. I think that Crime Dog's probably going to be around Auburn when he decides he is done, if he's done with coaching, Jason.
I mean, yeah,
he's talked about, you know, when he came back, it's like he built a house here, and that's where he
kept
was
a house
back.
Here for sure. I would get. We haven't learned it yet. I would guess there'll be some sort of off-field.
Oh,
opportunity for Weston McGriff here to continue to be a part of things in some capacity.
How old is he? I don't
probably know. Late 50s.
Yeah, so he's got some time left.
Yeah, and so I would guess, you know, you'll start to
he'll get a job. He's good.
Yeah,
so but he has worked on and off the field here.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So
that's right.
Yeah, I think you'll see some of that with all the roles, all the things that you have to do inside.
Yeah, there's
the program
so many
now
opportunities. That's great.
I agree. So and then you look offensively and still waiting on a couple of positions offensively. Still, Cody Burns hasn't been announced yet because they're waiting to see, I think,
exactly some, what his role
correct,
is going to be.
What he's going to be. I do think he's going to coach wide receivers. I think that's going to be part of
it. Well, I think he will be an associate head coach.
Yeah, and so I think you have that as well. You know, what happens to running back, what happens to tight end. I think we'll have to see those things and what happens at those two spots. So pretty close to rounding this thing out in terms of a coaching staff.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that Alex Golish had talked about. The priority, obviously, was going to be the roster. And Jason, I've never attended a coach's press conference like the one we were at Monday, where I've been in the room where a lot of coaches would talk and talk because they didn't want to have questions asked. Or they wanted to avoid questions.
Yeah, the Will Muschamp, where he would start a press his SEC media days by going down the entire roster and killing like 20 of the minutes.
Right,
he was great at doing that.
But that's not what Golish just was going in depth on every single question and didn't seem like, you know, he was in any hurry at all to get done. But I mean, I'm sure that sort of gave me a pretty good feeling about how things are going. I would imagine that his conversations with players, you know, are going to be very in-depth. I mean, he wants to know everything. He wants to know all the details. And this has been something that has been very time-staking, I'm sure. I mean, all the time that he has spent. But he wants to know as much as he can about these players because he's trying to determine who they really, really want and who really, really wants to be here.
Yeah, no, you're right. You gotta figure all that out now. That's why they met so much with these players.
Yeah, that's
everybody
really
has a decision to make.
Yeah, that's changed too, Jason. Because the old days, the end of the year exit was, hey, what are we gonna work on over the winter? How are we gonna get better? You know, your goals and all that. Now you gotta make sure they're gonna stay and be a part of your program if you want them. And that's really changed too. So it's another thing, Bill, that's we didn't have to worry about.
There could be some attrition.
Yeah,
but the guys didn't have the options of being able to play immediately if they left.
Yeah, it's really something.
All right, we'll get to just underway. We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Love for you to join in. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline 334-321-1390. Bill, Coach Don Dunn, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, Drew at the controls, here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Coach Don Dunn, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we'd love for you to join in anything on your mind sports-wise here on this Wednesday afternoon. It's finals week, so there's no competition, athletic competition going on this week. Auburn basketball having the week off after that trip out to Arizona, talking with Andy Burcham a little yesterday, and then saw him again today, just raving about the experience and the atmosphere, and he has had a chance to see perhaps the two best teams in the country here this year as Auburn's schedule, Jason. I mean, it is more than challenging when you play Michigan, Arizona, Purdue. You've already had St. John's on there, Houston.
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, quite the schedule. Auburn's 7-3, and I mean, when you look at 7-3 with the schedule they played, yeah, that's not bad at all. Look, they were beaten soundly by both Michigan and Arizona, but they're not the only teams. It happened again last night, as a matter of fact. With Michigan just dispatching. I mean, Michigan has won five or six straight games by 25 or more points.
Yeah, they were all at 30, and then last night they were up 43 with 4 minutes left, and then I think they got outscored by 15 at the end to make it where they only won by 28.
Right.
So, yeah, they've been dominant. UConn, Florida was a great game.
It really was.
And you look and look, there's just going to be bad matchups for this team. Michigan was a terrible matchup for this team. They've been a terrible matchup for everybody because they're shooting the ball too. Arizona is a big physical team, plays a little different style. And Florida's going to be that same way too. Florida's going to be a terrible matchup for this team. Now, they don't shoot it nearly what they did last year, but they're going to have five or six guys that are 6'10 or more that just crash the glass, and they're relentless mm-hmm. on the boards. But you're also going to have some teams that you match up better with. The thing you have to do, to me, the lack of assists and turnovers have been the issue, and that's not a size thing.
No.
They've got to figure out a way to share the basketball more. And I mean, Todd Pettifer's playing great, but you look and you got two guys that play a lot of one-on-one basketball that are your leading scorers right now. They got to find a way to get other guys involved and to take some of the pressure off, because right now that's probably the thing you look at from a basketball standpoint, is they got to find a way to be a little bit more team oriented than they've been especially in some of these big moments.
Yeah, and turnovers haven't been a terrible problem. It's only been a couple of times that Auburn's even had double figure turnovers, but the assist to turnover ratio or the assist to bucket ratio is something that's surprisingly low for
yes.
Auburn.
Yeah, so. It's in the 300s right now. I think they're 303, something like that, for their assist per made field goal is way down the list this season, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, they have talent. There's no question about that. I mean, they've got probably a half dozen guys that could go out and put up 20 or more just about any time. It's just getting consistency and making that extra pass or two that we got so used to seeing last year. And that's one thing. Look, this isn't last year. It's not going to be. Auburn's not going to be able to have that rim protection that they had a year ago.
Yeah.
And one of the things Andy and I were talking today at lunch is, you know, there's no question that last year Auburn's perimeter players, the guards, could take chances because they knew if a guy got by them, there's Janai and Dillon
yes.
back there under the basket. Now, if they do that this year and a player gets by them, they have a much better chance. And that's not the only reason, but it was really shocking to see that Arizona had 60 points in the paint the other night.
Yeah, and, you know, And I've said it since early on. They're going to have to find a way to get Emeka Porum. Mm-hmm. He's going to have to get some minutes. I mean, they're going to have to find a way to get him on the court. And I know that you're going to give up some things when you do that. But on the back end, he's a guy that can at least protect the rim.
So. Right. He can alter some shots
and so
at least.
I think you're going to have to live with that that defense. Because I think about, you know, whether it's – you know, and it's a very different game. I do know that. But I think about Dikembe Mutombo and Mamadou and some of these guys that – when they first started their careers, those guys weren't prepared to play physical basketball,
right.
But they still could help you in that regard, maybe some. So I think you're going to – maybe in some of these points you're going to have to go, hey, look, I mean, I know we had to protect him some, but maybe you got to give him a little bit more run to give you a little bit of rim protection at some point.
Yeah, because another reason, Keyshawn Murphy, I mean, I'm not sure how that he's been 100% healthy all year, and he's been foul prone. So I mean, you've got to have to get some minutes from somebody else there inside. I mean, I really like what we've seen from Keyshawn Murphy, and I think he's been even better than I thought offensively.
Yeah.
But you've got to get more. Got to be able to get more minutes out of him.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. You got to be able to get. You got to stay on the court, and that's the thing. Whether it's been injury, now fouls, he's a guy that is the ultimate key for this team. When you look at their success and what they're going to do the rest of this year, Keyshawn Murphy is at the center of it, in my opinion. And I think you look at, you know, obviously you continue to get more out of Jovic, I think, which is good. He's continuing to improve. And then you look at Sway. Those three guys have the body to give you some of those plays inside and a little bit of size, but they're going to have to be able to keep them on the court. And that's only three guys, and that's 6'9", and then 6'8", freshman as the other two.
That's
not a whole lot of bulk.
No, it's not. Team. And I mean, I look out there and I watch Keyshawn Murphy and I think, man, what a great four he would be if you had that true center, but you don't. Now, let me ask you, Jason, if you've heard anything. There was some rumbling that Auburn might be looking or, you know, checking into the possibilities of adding a player. Here over the Christmas break for the spring term. Have you heard anything?
Yeah, I mean, just the rumors of people asking about it a bunch.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty much all I've heard.
And so, yeah, I haven't heard anything else about it. Would I be shocked to see something like that pop up? No, because, I mean, heck, I'm not shocked by anything anymore.
Well, now that we see G League guys can play.
That's what I'm saying. I think that's where it would be some sort of role in that role. But I haven't heard anything specific on that, just people going, hey, I wonder if this is an option. Do you think this is an option? I've heard this is an option. Mm-hmm. And all I can say is I wouldn't rule anything out nowadays because you just don't know.
No, you're absolutely right. 334-321-1390. Bill, Don, and Jason, we'd love to hear from you here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise? You want to get into the playoff situation? Jason, I mean, we were, you know, we've talked about it a good bit. Don, haven't had a chance to really get your thoughts since the field was announced as well. I mean, you've got a 12-team field. There are probably three teams, I would say, outside the 12 that I think could win a game or two.
Yeah.
One of them, obviously, is Notre Dame, and you've heard from Notre Dame, and you've heard from Notre Dame, and you've heard from
Correct.
Notre Dame.
Yeah, way too much.
But I think Vandy. Yeah. I think Vandy could, the way they were playing down a stretch, I wouldn't want to be matched up against Vandy.
I had the question when we've been talking about the last few days. I said, if you polled 100 college football coaches right now that were in the Southeast especially and said, who would you rather play, Alabama or Vanderbilt?
Alabama.
I don't. It wouldn't be unanimous. There'll be people that go, well, Alabama because of talent.
Especially right now.
Right now?
Right there's now.
The last 3 weeks.
There's
yeah.
no question
yeah.
in my mind. I was on the field for both those games.
Yeah.
I was as close as you can get other than putting on pads.
And I feel like Vandy's gotten better.
I think once they got to the second half of Texas and realized, you know what, our best option is just to put him back there and start making backyard plays.
Yep.
To me, they're almost unstoppable. Defensively, they're not as good. Alabama's defense is really good. But if you said, which one of those teams do I feel like on a regular day I've got a better chance to beat, it'd be Alabama. Mm-hmm. No question about it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I agree, too.
And so you look at that one and go, and look at Auburn had to play really good offensively to stay in the game. They blasted Tennessee. Defense played pretty good against Tennessee. To me, that's the one where you go, because we've always heard these things, well, eye test. Well, this year eye test didn't matter. Every other year it's mattered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This year it did matter because if eye test mattered, it wouldn't look like what it does now.
Well, the problem is the eye test also can't see past the colors, I think.
That's
are
it. Yeah. Eye test is not colorblind.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
But I look at that, and to me, I mean, Notre Dame, you go, look, you had opportunities. People also forget, like, they beat Texas A&M home. If a guy just doesn't drop an extra point or a short field goal, whatever it was, guy just dropped, like, they
missed
the
extra
game.
Point. It would have tied it.
Would have tied the game, sent overtime at home. And so they've been really good since then. Again, they hadn't played great competition. Their competition is better than Texas A&M's.
Yeah.
Texas A&M schedule is the worst out of this, other than the two non-power force. It's the worst of this bunch. And again, this season, Auburn was 5-7. I was on the field for every game. Texas A&M was the only game I left where I went, I didn't think Auburn was at least as good, or if not the better team from a talent standpoint. Every one of them. I walked off, even Georgia. I said, look, Auburn should have been up 21-0 against Georgia. Georgia's gotten much better since then.
Right.
They have. But Alabama, I felt it. Like all these games, A&M, but it was strictly because the plan was so bad that I couldn't tell because they just didn't run the football at all.
No, they didn't try.
And so that one was one where I did. But even then, Auburn, it was that bad, and you had the ball three times with a chance to tie or take the lead in College Station.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at all these teams. Oklahoma's in there. Alabama's in there. I look and go, after watching Indiana and Ohio State, I'll be really surprised if those aren't the last two teams standing, because I just don't think this league is as good up top as it's been. I think it's as weak as it's been in a long, long time at the top of the heap.
Yeah, I think there's usually a team or two in big separation. This year, there's not.
No.
It's more balanced.
Yeah.
And that has taken, I think, a little bit away from the top. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break, then we'll get to phones. Who do we have?
Dak.
Dak, hang on. Yeah, I want to give you plenty of time. You'll be up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
That's it.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Don Dunn, Jason Caldwell here in the studio. And we will head to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar and Dak. Is up first. Hey, Dak.
Hey, guys. What's y'all's thoughts on the Michigan opening right now?
Well,
man, it's so quick. It's hard to have, you know, like who's likely or
Kalen DeBoer's name is going to be brought up quickly. Just for whatever reason,
that's why I brought that up. Yeah,
his name is going to be brought up very quickly. There's going to be some NFL guys.
Bill O'Brien
that get brought up. I don't know that they could go that one, but it'll get brought up. I think there's going to be some of those folks that you start to think about going, who are assistant coaches in the league that you go, that might be a landing spot for somebody like that.
Matt Campbell thinking, gee, if I'd waited a week,
I think Kalen DeBoer is going to be a name that people start to throw out there immediately. I don't think there's any question about that one.
Yeah, I agree with that one, too. I wasn't going to bring this up, but Jason was talking about it a little bit. Yeah, Jason, I agree. Man. This was the first Iron Bowl that I can remember where we had Alabama's number on every call, both on offense and defense. And I mean, our guys were well prepared, and our playmakers a lot of times just didn't make the play. I mean, I was really impressed with how well prepared our guys were, even though, you know, we missed our opportunity. But what's your thoughts on that, Jason?
Yeah, I thought after the first three possessions, to me, it felt like they're like, here's what we did. Alabama's ready for that. Now we better adjust. And I thought they adjusted better by doing some different things, because the first three they came out and said, we're going to throw that short passing game. And Alabama goes, no, you're not. You're not doing that. Once they adjusted, I thought they did a great job. You're right. If they catch the football, the normal catches that they make.
That's right. That's
they probably only had four drops.
That's probably a 320-yard. It's probably a 320-yard passing game.
And then what about on defense? If our – guys make the plays that they should have made.
Yeah, you had a couple.
Alabama wouldn't have had nothing.
Yeah, you had a couple opportunities. It would have looked very similar to what they did against Georgia the other night. I thought opportunities. But, Auburn has played Alabama well at home. Mm-hmm. That continued. But those other years, it felt like,
you had to
no
be almost
way,
perfect.
No way it should have been close. Mm-hmm. Hey, I don't know how they did it, whatever it was. This one didn't feel that way.
No, this one it felt like Auburn's a better team.
Yeah, and so I think you look at it, and again, you know, the playoff stuff now for them and all the matchups, it's a quicker turnaround this year, which I like. So now you don't have a month to wait to see. They got to play a game in 8 days. And, you know, you start to think about what that looks like. Oklahoma gives their quarterback a chance to get healthier. They haven't played very good either. That may be the first one to 16 wins because it might be 48 degrees in Norman, Oklahoma, too.
Yeah.
And so that might be I think if you're Alabama, that's as good a matchup as you could have possibly had, in my opinion.
I think they got a great
to make somebody have to beat you three times.
Guys, why didn't they swap A&M and Oklahoma so they wouldn't get the two rematches?
It
would have been very easily done.
Yes. We just had that conversation in the break. I don't understand it. I don't understand it.
If Alabama drops a spot, Dak, then you're not going to.
Yeah. You could have adjusted these things and easily said, "Hey, this is the way it works because of this. Now we don't have rematches," and people would have gone, "Thanks,
I appreciate that."
I mean, James Madison, Ole Miss would have been more interesting than looking at that rematch.
Tulane, Ole Miss, where it was 45-3 with 3 minutes left in that game, and Tulane scored a late touchdown. Now you got coaching changes, you got everything a little different, but. The Alabama Ole Miss, I mean Alabama Oklahoma rematch is the one that just irks me. And then if Ole Miss wins, they got to play Georgia again. There's nothing perfect, and you can't make it perfect, but you can at least try to give yourself a different game.
Tell me that in other sports there isn't some thinking of doing that for this first round matchup, and then what could happen in the second round, and so forth, maybe this is crazy to say. Maybe they need the NCAA helping them do that because the NCAA controls those other ones.
Yeah, they do. But they do.
That's right.
They do some of those matchups. Yeah. But at least it makes sense.
And guys, the last thing I want to leave you with, and get Jason's opinion on this, in the championship game the other night. I mean, the officiating with helmet to helmet, no calls.
Oh.
And I counted no less than 5 helmet to helmet. That if that was Auburn. They'd have been thrown. It just blows my mind that how different the officiating is when we play when other people play.
And a lot of it, too, when you look at it, sometimes you get officials that just kind of go, well, I'm just going to stay out of the way. And it looked like they were told in this game, stay out of the way. Here's why.
Yep.
Yeah, you don't want somebody missing the first half of that first playoff.
That's exactly right. So you go, man, has an impact. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. It looked like we're just going to stay out of the way of this one. And
guys, I'm telling you, they was 5 crucial helmet to helmets. Not even close.
There was one that they replayed, and I was very interested that the announcers avoided completely mentioning as they were watching the play. I'm telling my wife, look at this helmet to helmet. On this shot.
Exactly. All right, guys. Great show.
Good hearing from you, Dak. 334-321-1390. Yeah, you hate to, you know, get into that. And that didn't have any impact on the outcome of the game. But, yeah, I thought the exact same thing, Jason. I'm thinking, that they don't want to have any significant players having to sit out the first half of their first playoff
game. I think that whether or not it was a direct conversation or at least intended, I don't think there's any question that they, I won't say swallowed the whistle, but they might have shut down some video monitors and just said, that one's good, and just moved on. So, yeah, it wasn't officiated the same as much of the season was, in my opinion.
All right, we're at the 12-team playoff here again. How many more of these do you think we're going to have? I've got a feeling we're 16 next year.
I don't think we're having a single one. I think it's going to be 16 next year. I really do. And here's the thing. 12 never made sense to me anyway.
No,
it's either 8 or 16. No, you shouldn't have byes.
Well, you look what happened last year to the 4 teams that had byes. They all lost.
Correct. No byes. Mm-hmm. Everybody plays the same amount of games. And here's the other part of this, too. I don't know how much longer we're going to have bowl games, period. I hate it, but I'm telling you. And I think I told you this before. I walked off the field in Nashville 2 years ago saying to myself, unless it's a playoff game, this is the last time I'm ever coming to a bowl game until the day before the game. I'm not spending my time, money, energy, effort for what those games mean.
And that then, to follow that up, a lot of fans
felt
the same way. Yeah. I'm thinking, why am I coming back to a bowl game when this is what they
are? And I think you're going to see that different places. Now, Vanderbilt will be excited. There'll be some people that will be excited.
If you're a team, if you're a program that has really struggled and hasn't been to bowl games, then yes, that first time or that's an exciting matchup
Still, hey, you go to Orlando, people might go. Yeah. So hey, we'll go to the game and go to Disney or do something. There's still some of those things. I think some of these other games, we just saw it. I mean, like Birmingham, like there's no question in my mind if the Birmingham Bowl had said, look, we're going to play Clay Chalkville and Jackson High School. Let's just play those two teams and have the ultimate state championship game in the state of Alabama. It would have been more exciting for me. It may not have been nationally, but I think you'd have gone, hey, man, that's a lot more fun than a rematch of Georgia Southern and App State or whatever they're going to do.
Well, you know, what I wonder, and you know, I know we've talked about this, and I don't know how many times, you know, when you look at the playoffs now and you've got – it's, you know, I'm sure the James Madison and Tulane fans are excited about being there, but they're not going to be competitive. And we've talked about wouldn't it be cool to have a group of five championship? Maybe you could use the bowls for that.
I've been saying it for years. I think, and here's the other part. You could absolutely sell that, and they would have their own money.
I'd be a whole lot more interested in any of those playoff games than 99% of the bowl games.
100%. And I think you'll have more attention on those games. There'll be people watch this. You'll have two games that people watch. And more than likely, when they get done watching them, they're going to go, that team plays hard. But that's going to be it.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll pull off a Boise State, do something like that. But to think that they're going to go and compete in the playoffs where you have to win three games,
right,
it's not happening. And so I know there's a faction of folks who played at that level and others going, no, we want a chance to compete at the highest level. I would rather have a chance to compete for a championship. I would. Give me a chance to go win a state championship.
Championship at any level is so special.
I mean, just think if in the state of Alabama, if it was still 1A through 3A, I mean, how different it'd be.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Like, you've created different divisions because you have such a different level of schools in terms of enrollment. I mean, Texas, I just looked at Texas yesterday. I went and looked, and Allen, Texas has 6,800 students. 6,800 students. Their school was in there with 90. Should those teams play each other?
No.
That's what we're doing. I mean, like, we're doing the same things.
You're right.
There are different levels, but these people chose to be D1, and so you're like, look, that's not feasible. And I'd love to see a group of five playoff, eight teams, play it in bowl games, and then have the national championship game of the group of five playoff in the Citrus Bowl.
Yeah.
And it'd be awesome. It'd be great.
I'd watch every one of them. 334-321-1390. Let's get to Mitch before we get to our final break of hour number one. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. Your previous caller, I even wrote this down. It was in the fourth quarter, about 10:35 to go in the game. Number 41, crown of the helmet, hit UGA's quarterback. And that may have been the one you were talking about, Bill.
It was, because Gunnar Stockton looked a little woozy there after the play.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed that. I was like, wait a minute. Where's the targeting call? But yeah,
wasn't any mention of it. And I thought for sure they're going to stop play and go back and review it, but they didn't.
Right. So I think I heard this right. I don't know what they ended up with, but I think Bama only had like 82 yards of total offense at the end of the third quarter against Georgia.
It may not have been that much, because they had most, they had more than half of their yardage came on that on their last two possessions.
Well, and yeah, their only touchdown drive had 2 15-yard penalties.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So the fourth quarter is where they gained most of their yards.
Mm-hmm.
But I was listening Monday to Dan Patrick, and he's talking to Rick Neuheisel, and he thinks that they're going to eventually go to a 24-game playoff, which
– that's going
to
mean more buys.
Right, that's what I was going to ask you guys, because, like, you could have the first and second round could be home games, I guess. You'd have 16 teams in the first round, and then you'd have 8 teams that get a bye for the second round. But they would, I'm assuming they would both be, those would be home games if they went to 24. I don't know. I mean, there's,
probably, you know, yeah, they probably kind of could, because by. They, I mean, I mean, unless they wanted to add more, but I mean, they've already got the main big spots set, so you could do that by adding more home games, and by going to 24, you could add more.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, I know how some of these basketball brackets work out. People get like triple buys and stuff. It wouldn't surprise me if they would do something like that. I don't know how they would do it with football. I mean, with me looking at it, the easiest way would be 16 teams first round, 8 teams second round with a bye, and then you get to 16 teams after the first round, and then you get to 8, to 4, to 2, and then 1. So, anyway, I don't know what they're going to do, but I do agree that they're going to definitely probably go to 16 either next year or the year after.
I
got, guys. War Eagle.
Appreciate it, Mitch. With that, we'll get to our
Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Coach Don Dunn, Jason Caldwell with us for a few more minutes here on this Wednesday. Jason, let's see the... right now we're just sort of waiting to see what happens personnel wise, the rest of the staff and players. I mean, they don't have to say anything. So, I mean, it could be, you know, all the way up until, you know, New Year's Day or something before we're hearing about some players. But up to this point, I feel like I'm not shocked by any of the players that have entered the portal. I don't think Auburn has lost anyone who you would say was a surefire starter. Maybe Horatio Fields might have been probably a guy who was in line for as much playing time as anybody.
Had you kept the previous staff.
Right.
Yeah, that's the whole point about this is fit in the new Absolutely. System, those things. And I think there's probably some of the question on some of those things. So, yeah, I think you look at you know, Perry Thompson, you go young guy, a lot of upside.
Potential, question.
But 2 years in, you're still waiting on that. Start looking at some other ones. I think, there's going to be other guys. People might as well.
There are going to be some that people
they're going to get. You get ready for it. There's really going to be some guys that maybe surprise you. But I think that's just part of it. I think had you kept the staff, they would have happened. Mm-hmm. You keep DJ Durkin, there'll be some guys on defense, and people will go, "Hey, I didn't." You're going to lose people no matter who yep. it is. It's just the way it is. And so I think now, limit it. Keep the main guys you want to keep. And then you have the ability to go out and add some guys in the portal. I mean, I think this opens the door to me, even with going to 105, the scholarship, this opens the door for me to even go back to the junior college ranks a little bit if you want to. I think, but you start going, look, can you find a big 220-pound running back that this kind of was a late bloomer that's in junior college ball? Can you find a three technique that you go, man, that guy's pretty strong and physical. We don't need a starter, but we need somebody that can play and then – maybe you find a diamond. I think it might open the door because, to me, those guys are probably physically closer to playing in year one than most mm-hmm. high school guys would be. But you're thinking about, well, we don't have the time to develop them. Well, now you got 105 scholarships. You got a little bit more room to have a couple of those guys. Maybe you do some of that as well.
That's an interesting thought. I hadn't really thought of that. All right, so a couple of, let's see, 10 days or close to – yeah, I guess it's 10 days in now for Alex Golish. Wow. Just your thoughts, your first impressions.
Yeah, it's been good so far. I think you look at the additions and start to think about what's left on this staff. But you know, you think about bringing in a guy that's a former defensive coordinator as part of your staff mm-hmm. on defense is a big deal. I think keeping that trio of guys on offense is huge. When you think about Joel Gordon, especially what he's done at quarterback, what he's done as a play caller, what they've done offensively. And Cody Burns and O-line coach Tyler, those guys being together, I think that's really important because we've seen it in the past 7-8 years how important it is to have guys on the same page offensively. I think you look at Alex Golish going, those are my guys. I'm going to let them go do what they do. I think that's important. But you think about quarterback guy that has, I mean, Brock Purdy, and you think about all the names and think about you know, Hendon Hooker at Tennessee, and then the last few years, Byron Brown, they've produced. They've been efficient. They've thrown the football, and even when they couldn't run it, they threw the football. That's the difference. They've been able to do it when the team says, I'm going to take something away. Okay. So I like the addition so far. We'll see what the rest of the staff holds.
Great stuff. As always, Jason, we really appreciate it. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you and everybody at Auburn Undercover's got going.
Check us out, auburnundercover.com, part of the 24/7 network. I think I had a Christmas special on right now, 50% off for new subscribers, so come check this out. Still doing, you know, a lot of roster stuff, recruiting things and more, and so got all that. Basketball playing again this weekend, I think, right?
Yeah, Saturday.
So Nathan will have some stuff on that as well, so come check us out.
Thanks a lot, Jason. Appreciate it. We will step aside, back with hour number two of the Wednesday Drive.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. And we just have a shift change as Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover leaving. And Dan, how you feeling, man? Dan Peck is back in the studio.
Yeah, I'm feeling great. Let me plug in real quick here, guys. Always great to see you. Coach.
How are you?
Great to see you. Thank you so much, as always, for your service,
no
helping
problem.
Out.
You guys killed them.
Oh no, the Trojans.
How do you score 132 points?
Two or three at a time.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll tell you, it helps.
Well,
it helps when one girl hits 10 threes. Imani Jenkins,
she's having a year.
That is the it ties for the most in a game this year in D1 ball. It's a team record, program record for single game threes. No one's hit more than 10 in a D1 women's game this year. So,
to do in practice.
I mean, they Trojans are rolling. Oakwood's a good NAIA program, but they were overmatched. Troy had an 18-0 run to start the second quarter.
Yeah, I was keeping up with it.
Yeah, and so we were. You know what? Next Wednesday, another matinee game.
Yeah,
Old Dominion. We start conference play up in Norfolk, and those are two of the four or five best teams in the league that are going to square off. So this is going to be a fun one. But yeah, Troy took care of business today in front of a bunch of kids on field trips.
Yeah,
a lot
so
of noise.
Yeah, no kid.
No, but I'm feeling good, Bill. Yeah, it was good.
Well,
it was good to get a little extra sleep in. My travel had caught up to me a little bit. I know Ferg sounds a little under the weather too. I hope he's okay, but he was battling something when we were recording the. You can hear it a little bit in the podcast. So hopefully he's in the house tomorrow, I think.
That would be good. We haven't had a chance to spend a decent amount of time with him in a couple of weeks. So hopefully he's feeling better.
Might be calling him. You know, we'll see. But no, it's good to be here. And there's no shortage of stuff going on, right? I mean, Auburn's still bouncing back from. I mean, you have the Auburn centric stuff, and then you can go.
Then you go nationally.
You go a variety of different directions.
I mean, a huge story today. With Michigan firing Oof. Sherrone Moore for cause.
Yeah.
And when they came out and said the university had had evidence that Sherrone Moore had an inappropriate relationship with a staff member.
Yeah. And suddenly Michigan, and I don't know if they necessarily thought they were going to be searching for a brand new coach.
I don't think they did.
No, but now Michigan, I mean,
because
we'll see.
If you did, you might want to have started doing it before some of the other positions were filled.
Yeah, and we'll see if Michigan decides to promote from inside and sort of just try to keep everything together this late in the cycle, or if they decide, you know, we're Michigan, we're a superpower. There are, I mean, what an interesting job that becomes they want to go actually search for
just a couple of years removed from a national title.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the. I mean, we played this game with LSU this cycle, and I'd ask both of you guys, like, all things being equal, how many jobs in college football are better than Michigan? How many places have a higher ceiling as far as how often and how big you can win? Than Michigan.
You can count them on one hand, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this when LSU came open, and we thought, okay, Ohio State, Bama, Georgia, you know, Texas ? Like it feels like you're running out of schools. Michigan is right there.
Like
those are probably. the five or six best jobs in college football, all things being equal.
No, and I think he'd put Notre Dame.
Notre Dame's there to make seven if you want, but it's like, I mean, SC, you know, could be in that mix as well if all things are, you know. But 20 years ago, SC was certainly
20 years ago for sure. I don't know about now.
Right, so it's like, but okay, that's if those are your seven best jobs in college football, two of them have come open in the cycle for very different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Jason mentioned it, and look, a lot of folks are mentioning that Kalen DeBoer's name is definitely being floated out there by some folks. And I wonder if some of them aren't Alabama folks. It's funny to me. There's some Alabama folks that feel like this isn't exactly what they expected.
I know an Alabama fan who has been out on DeBoer since the loss to Vanderbilt last year, and has just said, This is a guy I don't trust. I didn't like the, you know, the quarterback games earlier in the season. Like I think he's been trying to win back the trust of a lot of Alabama fans since then, and missing the playoff last year, he missed an opportunity to do it. And I think that, like, for all the talk of how important the Auburn game was for Kalen DeBoer, and it was, I mean, it was certainly
it was, because they lose that when they're out of the playoff.
Yeah, but I think a loss, a disappointing showing, and a loss to Oklahoma.
I wonder
for a coach who made the playoff and the SEC championship game, I wonder if his stock could be astonishingly low among Alabama fans.
I agree with that. So it'll be really interesting to see. And I was just asking Don, I said, I wonder what Lane's buyout is. Lane may be willing to buy out his own deal in Baton Rouge. But I mean, this will be really interesting to follow. So anyway, it's good to have Dan back in.
You know, maybe Brady wants to dip his toe into pivot from broadcasting on Sundays to go do something else.
Stay tuned. It will be very interesting. Before we get going a little further, wanted to send out our thoughts and prayers to our good friend Brian Matthews, whose wife had a mishap yesterday. And is recovering now at East Alabama Medical Center. So,
oh, of course, no, yeah. Love them.
Brian posted that she was taking a dog for a walk, and if you've ever been, ever been over to Brian's house, there's a very steep driveway that they have, and she took a spill and broke both the bones in her lower leg.
Oh no!
But Dr. Wynn Lyle handled the surgery, and Brian texted me and said. She's doing fine. So, just thoughts out.
Yeah.
Thoughts out to Brian and Yvonne.
Yeah.
Especially.
Best wishes to the Matthewses. We always appreciate Brian's contributions to the show, and Yvonne's been great. So it's just hopefully the news is as positive as that. Best wishes to. And the dog's okay. I imagine like in this.
Yeah, I believe so. Okay. Haven't heard anything.
Okay, good. So all right. Best wishes to the Matthews family.
All right, we're just getting underway here in hour number two. Bill, Dan, and Don, Drew at the controls. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And
is it Carrie?
Yeah, Carrie, I believe, is up first. Hey, Carrie.
Yeah. Hey, man. First of all, I'll set up a prayer for Brian and his spouse. And is that you said Dr. Wynn Lyle? Is that the Wynn Lyle played at Auburn?
Indeed,
back
it is. Yes, the former kicker, okay. Dr. Wynn Lyle. Yes,
he hit a couple of pretty big field goals back in the day.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, it's a couple of things. I hate to be the dead horse about the playoff, you know, deal, but I hear and. You know, we just have to agree to disagree, I guess, if people, you know, don't agree with it. But the thing that people say about Alabama, well, you know, the championship game shouldn't count. Well, in my opinion, I mean, all those games should count. I mean, they win the championship game. They got whipped. I mean, and I know this is, you know, a long time ago now, 2017, but I mean, Auburn, same thing happened to Auburn. They went to the championship game, back in 17, and Alabama, who didn't even win their division, goes to the playoffs and plays where it's at. So I'm just, you know, I know Alabama's in, there's nothing you can do about it, but that's my problem. I don't see where you could say, well, championship game doesn't matter. You know, I'm not going to hold it against them. I don't get that.
The conspiracy, carry would be that there have been three times since they expanded the playoff. I mean, if you want to go back to 2011, right, there's four times when they had a really tough decision to make in the college football playoff. In 11, you had to take either Oklahoma State or Alabama to face LSU. LSU had beaten Alabama in the regular season. Committee decides, the BCS at that time decides, let's take Alabama, rematch. And Alabama wins the championship game, by the way, worth pointing out there. In, was it, it was, when was, I guess you have three, because you also have the, well, okay, 17. As you were talking about, it wasn't just Auburn loses, which opens up a spot for Alabama. You also had, so Alabama was 11-1 with a loss in the Iron Bowl. You had a two-loss Ohio State Big Ten champion. You had a two-loss USC Pac-12 champion, and both of those teams had scheduled non-conference games more difficult than Alabama's non-conference. I think Alabama played Florida State, who was highly ranked, and then lost.
Yeah, and turned out
to be, you know, that season went sour for them. But it's like you're sort of punishing USC for losing to Notre Dame, right? Because if they schedule soft, they're a one-loss conference champion and they're in. Ohio State lost a tough non-conference game that year, and so it was like a difficult decision to make. Alabama gets the spot, and it goes to Alabama. You have the year Florida State gets left out. Right? Like a couple of years ago where, I mean, if you were going to leave a team out, it's probably Alabama because you're not leaving out Texas. Texas beat Alabama.
You're right. Alabama would have been the team left out and they were not.
And the other two teams were undefeated. Right? So it's like, if something had to give there, it would have been and this time.
But then last year they felt like they should be in, and they weren't left out.
That's true. They were left out.
Alabama's got some pull somewhere. I'm not conspiracy, but they've got some pull somewhere.
And I'm not even saying any of these were the wrong decision, right? Like it is interesting how, like, they seem to keep getting the cards when it's a game of chance.
Exactly.
And this year, I think it was just a really tough spot that the committee was in, because I don't think there's an obvious answer between Notre Dame, Miami, and Alabama if you're going to leave one of those teams out of the playoff. I don't think there's an obvious one that it's like, oh, okay, they've shown themselves to be less deserving of a playoff spot than the other. Because with Alabama, you can point to the fact they have the extra loss and didn't look impressive in November. Mm-hmm. With Notre Dame, you could say they lost to the two best teams they played, and outside of a win over USC, they beat a lot of teams that aren't really, that, you know, don't really move the needle or prove anything. And then with Miami, it's a more questionable overall body of work than the other two teams. But Miami would have the head to head win over Notre Dame.
Right. I sure would have loved to have seen a Vandy and BYU in. Over JMU and Tulane. I'm not mocking those schools, but.
I think if it's gonna be 12, and I'm a friend to the small school. I'm a mid-major guy. You know, I got Troy Trojans conference championship rings. But if the number's only 12, I don't like prerequisites. I don't like the okay, well, we're holding five spots for five conference. Like, I think if the number's 12, it just needs to be the best 12.
Yeah.
The committee should just pick the best 12 teams.
I'm that way with 16. I'd just as soon have it all be the 16 best teams. Don't have automatic bids.
And you know what? And I'm talking myself, especially with conference championship weekend being as useless as it is, I'd be fine with 32 and 9. If everybody's only playing 12, if we're not playing a play-in game, if the season stops after week 12, and everyone's playing 12 regular season games and no postseason except for the playoffs or a bowl, I'm fine with crowning 9 conference champions, picking the next best 23 teams, and giving 16 of those teams home games. And playing, like, when you would play conference championship weekend, you're playing 16 home games instead on that weekend, and then you've got 16.
Well, golly, I'm okay up to 16. I like a home game for every one of the top half. If it's 16, then it's 8. I mean, if it's
16 and conference championship weekend being like a play-in weekend on top of 16?
Oh, I don't know so much about that. I think you'd have to have that, though, because they want the money back. I don't have to have it as much, I think, as the conferences will want that, because they're going to miss the moneymaker that the championship gives.
I'm sort of pro expansion of the playoff rather than a con, but I know if it becomes a conference deal, like that's, you know, if it's a money grab, that's different. But I would say at that point, if you're having playoffs, you know, if you're having play-in games for your spots and all that, just get rid of that and play 32 and just have 16 teams host the top 16, get a home game. In that scenario,
the thing is, I don't think that's going to satisfy the SEC or the Big Ten because they want their extra money. But I don't know. It's going to change. I think it's going to be 16 next year, Kerry.
Right. Yeah. I do too. I agree with what Jason said earlier about them going to 16. And one more thing, I'll hang up. I think three, and I know there's obviously some guys in transfer portal, but the three guys that really come to mind that we really need to keep is obviously Cam, Malcolm Simmons, and the Deuce. I think Deuce is the future of the program. I think he can compete and win this starting job during the spring. And I think Ashton Daniels is the top-notch QB, too. But we've got to do whatever we can. I think we need to keep those three guys somehow.
Kerry, I think all three of those guys are very high on the priority list. Doesn't mean you can keep them if you go out and get another quarterback or another couple of receivers.
Two of those, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, Kerry, but two of those guys have shown you a lot more as a college football player than the other one, right? Like, two of those guys have produced in SEC games over two seasons, and the other one, I think Deuce Knight looks, you know, he's really promising, and I would rather see Deuce Knight at Auburn than anywhere else, but I don't think you prioritize keeping Deuce Knight to the point where you would say no to a guy that you think can win you games next year.
I did not realize.
Like, I do not think you prioritize keeping Deuce Knight if it's like, well, we have to say no to this quarterback that we think would immediately come in and be QB1 and maybe QB1 with some distance between him and everyone else, because we want to keep Deuce Knight around for a couple. I don't think you, like, as much as I want to see Deuce Knight stay, and you know, I think, you know, like, the best case scenario would be maybe, like, either Deuce Knight is the starter next year, or someone who's excellent is the starter and Deuce Knight is learning for another season. But I wouldn't turn down an excellent option at quarterback because I want to see Deuce Knight develop so much. Like, that's where I would sort of draw the line there.
Anyway, that QB room, I think, really it looks good going into spring. Anyway, thanks, guys. War Eagle.
Good hearing from you, Kerry. 334-321-1390. We need to get to our first break. Who have we got hanging?
Pat,
hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Don with Drew at the controls. That sounds like a subtle singing group.
That's right.
Bill, Dad, and Don.
Yeah,
like a knockoff Three Coming Stooges, which is close to what we are.
Yeah,
right?
You're right about that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get back to the drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys. I got three points here. Okay, so I agree with Jason on the 16 that it needs to happen immediately. I think that's just. I mean, this year was corruption at the, and I agree with the last caller. Or the one before that was talking about Alabama, because it was so corrupt for the fact that it's not that Alabama should be left out, it's that they should be in technically by their schedule, but of the 10 teams that were going to get ranked, they were playing the worst of everybody in there. But if you look, if they had moved them to 10, this is where the corruption comes in. If they had moved them to 10 like everybody in the country thought they should have done, I don't think there's one, even Alabama fans thought they should have been number 10. then they would have played Texas A&M, and they would have got smoked. Mm-hmm. Because Texas A&M, they did lose to Texas, but Texas A&M is a bad matchup for Alabama. Mm-hmm. Because they would have beaten Alabama soundly. And Oklahoma is the game that Alabama had a chance. So they did it purely to give Alabama the best chance to have a decent game. I really think Texas A&M would have smoked them, and I think that's exactly the reason why they left them at nine.
The only thing about that I disagree with, Pat, and I think you might be right that like A&M's a worse matchup right now.
Well, I agree with that.
Well, how about that? But do you think in general you'd rather play at Oklahoma than at A&M in a playoff game right now? And is it clear cut, or do you think there's like, and for that I mean you can lump Ole Miss in there too. Like
Oklahoma got lucky to win that last game. They had 200 yards of offense, and then they got some turnovers that won the game, a pick six.
They didn't play that well. Keep in mind, they didn't play that well offensively in the win over Alabama.
No, they didn't.
Right? Like
no,
that's,
Alabama gained about 150 yards.
Yeah, so this was a case where they were willing to make people play the game over, play a rematch. Instead of making the better matchups and make it be different teams, they were willing to do that to keep Alabama from getting blown out. And I really think they probably would have lost 30-7 in the Texas A&M game. I think they probably will be Oklahoma. And that's the thing about it is there was no way a rational person would have kept Alabama at nine after that. I mean, don't knock them out. That's fine. Don't make the game knock them out of the playoffs. But why keep them at the nine seed? That was the problem. And then one thing I want to talk about on basketball. Jason hit it right. I think the key to this whole team is assists. I mean, the Arizona had 23 assists. Mm-hmm. So they were pass, and then easy baskets and wide open shots, and we are so predictable that. And if you look at it, I hate to say it, I'm not sure what it is. We seems like we did it in the big games, in the two big games against Michigan and Arizona, but we don't really do it in the other games. And maybe they just don't have the players to stop it. But we want to do the one-on-one ball. And they know it. They knew it so well that they double teamed. The minute we passed it to whoever was going to take their one-on-one go, we dribble around a little bit, pass it around a little bit, not trying to get a basket, but just to waste time for whatever reason. And then we pass it to whoever's going to make their move to take them to the basket.
Hey, Pat, on that point, because it's funny you bring that up. I listened to some of Arizona's radio call over the weekend, and they talked to Tommy Lloyd, Arizona's head coach, right, in the pregame, and he was previewing Keyshawn Hall. And he was like, we've seen Keyshawn Hall before. We know this is a guy who he's going to hit some difficult shots, but he's willing to take difficult shots. And that's to the point where the coach is willing to talk about it, you know, to the radio guys.
Yeah, he's not going to give it up all the time.
I agree with you. I mean, you can convince yourself, and maybe this is right, that Arizona and Michigan are two of the absolute best teams in college basketball, and that was a big reason why it brought out the worst in Auburn basketball in those games. But seeing the way that guys were willing to try to like take really tough shots and weren't really looking to pass to get Auburn back in those games, That was concerning, right? I mean, it's something you hope that doesn't come back to cost you other games later in the season against teams that aren't Arizona and Michigan. Well,
and see, I thought what we would do, because we have the taller guys that can shoot the three, that can drive to the basket and finish, I thought we would be doing what Indiana and OKC were doing. I thought we would be we'd fake the three, drive by your guy. Then if you don't get the layup, then you pass it out to an open guy. He either makes the three or fakes the three and drives. I thought we would be passing and passing and passing, and we've gotten to be where we just do this, just get the ball to the guy, and then it's like when Charles Barkley, you get him the ball and just let him do his work.
Clear out.
I'll tell you what, Pat, against Arizona, I think there might have been plans to do that, but when Tahad saw his teammates miss as frequently as they did, he might have started thinking, like, okay, well, I'm going to keep this and shoot it, even if it's – because Tahad took some ridiculous – and hit some ridiculous shots against Arizona.
That's not going to work. Yep. That's not going to work. And that's the other problem is they literally – I think it was this game or maybe the game before, but they literally triple-teamed Tahad coming over the line. Like for you to triple team a guy, it's like you know he's not going to pass. And then he tried to split the triple team. And I'm like thinking to myself, how can you possibly triple team a guard at the top of the key and not have two or three people wide open?
It's 2-on-4. Just doing quick math, Pat. It's 2-on-4. The rest
great defensive. Two can stop four. Yeah.
But we would not pass it to an open guy. We still turned it over. I'm like how can they know to triple team him? It's one thing to double team, but they triple teamed him and it worked. And it's because we are not passing the ball.
Pat,
it's
you were at the Michigan game, and it was the number one. It was the number one thing Stephen Pearl wanted to talk about afterward was how little his team passed the ball in the half court, and how that was a big reason why that game got out of control. I think it was another, like, I mean, I don't think that the lack of passing was the only problem against Arizona, because it was, I mean, you don't give up
60 points in the paint.
Well, how about this? When it's an 18-2 run to start the second half, 5 minutes, 18-2, like, the two is a problem. So is the
18 is a big problem.
So is the 18. There were a lot. But no, you're right. But it's not going to work. It's not going to work without sharing the ball. I think you're absolutely right about
and,
that.
And that's something that a lot of people didn't take into account. When you have as many new players as Auburn does this year, it's going to take a while. You know, if you get there, there's no guarantee you're going to get there, but it's going to take a while for guys to be comfortable doing that. Most of these guys have been the man. They've been the guy that on their team was, you get them the ball and they're going to get the bucket. And now you've got, four of them at a time out there playing that are used to doing that. It's difficult to just expect that they're going to go ahead and pass the ball.
It's a reminder, Pat, of how special last season was too.
Exactly.
Because those guys last year had played with each other for at least a season, right? When you think about Janai and Dylan and Chad and Denver absolutely. Like, these are guys who had been, they'd been with the program more than one season. They knew, because the other thing that's happening this year is you're having those defensive breakdowns where a guy isn't sure if he's supposed to come help or if he's supposed to stay on the perimeter. And then you're getting a lot of, like, remember Night at the Roxbury, the SNL sketch where they would, like, point the finger at me, you, you, me, me. Like they're doing that after
a lot of that.
Doing that sometimes after the other team scores baskets. And that, that's something that's, these are all things that you hope, the more they play together, the less you'll see it.
That's the thing. The passing was great for them, and that's why they got 23 assists. Mm-hmm. And we got 7 assists. I mean, we scored 70 points, I think. And we got 7 assists. I mean, and some of those were just, they had no choice. I mean, they were. I mean, he had to throw the ball away.
And some of them, it's like from the back court to the front court.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, but I just don't understand. It seemed like our team, we have so many great players on our team that if they ever did get to where they passed the ball, it'd be unstoppable. But for some reason, we just got it. And it's so obvious that the other team is just, okay, the minute he throws it, this guy double team, he will not throw it away. And we had that a little bit with Janai last year. But none of our other guys were really great driving to the basket and finishing. So we really didn't have that problem. We were trying to pass to get open shots. It's like this year, we've just kind of gone away from trying to do it. And I'm thinking, it could be this. We didn't need more time, and we ran into two bulldozers. And I get that. But it seems like we don't have that problem as much when we play lesser teams. I mean, even St. John's, we kind of figured it out. But it just seems like if we ever get to where, because I'm just telling you, if you're a point guard and they're triple teaming you, and it's not the last 10 seconds of the game, then it's too obvious what's going on. I mean, they know you're not going to pass it to anybody that's going to get a basket. You know what I'm saying? You're just going to pass it around the horn.
And if you don't pass out of the triple team, it proves their point, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's
yeah.
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. You've seen.
Tried to split it.
Yeah, and it sounds great. Sometimes it sounds great that, hey, all we need to do is add a couple more guys that average 20 a game, and we're just going to, that's going to add 40 more points to the team. Yeah, teams like the Lakers have done that in the past. Add big scorers, but somebody's got to facilitate, and there's got to be some unselfishness going on.
I think Mark Pope probably played fantasy basketball to an extent this offseason far as who Kentucky went to go get. And there's not a ton of, they think they signed a bunch of Zach Calzadas right, in the transfer portal, and I think the connective tissue, you know, that the guys that are, and you know who comes to mind for me, like Sebastian, seems like a guy that might be willing to be more of a dirty work.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, that reminds me a little bit of what Chris, you know, was doing the last couple of years. But in general, it's like that adjustment from being the number one option and the guy who has to take tough shots because the team needs him to get going offensively no matter what, to one of several options on a team, right? Like we've seen last year, Kelly. The Georgia Tech transfer, Miles Kelly.
Oh yeah,
Miles. Miles Kelly did it. Denver did it.
Denver had to be forced to take more shots.
Chad did it coming from the junior. Like there were places where it's like you had the green light no matter what because they needed you to get going. You don't necessarily have the green light no matter what here, and I think that's something. I mean Tahad does hit difficult shots, but it's something Todd's dealing with. It seems like it's something Keyshawn Hall is really dealing with in those first two games, and even Overton to an extent since the St. John's game. Overton's, you know, put up some really tough looks, and so I hope that's something they can fix by trusting each other and playing a little more team ball, because you know I've made the joke already, but Steven's going to be 65 years old by the time the season's over.
Think about it, Florida. Yeah. Florida's 5-4.
I don't want to look at Florida. They're five and four.
Yeah. They're 5-4, and Kentucky's 5-4, and they just got blown out.
If there's good news besides the fact that I think Auburn has two wins that are going to look really good as the season goes on. We'll see what happens with NC State, but I think St. John's going to win a lot of games, and then NC State, you know, looks like a top 40. I mean, they're a top 40 net team. Right now, top 45 net team right now. We'll see where that win goes. But this time last year, if you had asked me how many of the 10 best teams in the country are SEC teams, I would have said 4, maybe 5. And if you ask me the question right now, the answer might be 0. And so it's like that represents how wide open the league is as far as once you get into conference play. Like that represents, I mean, because in the net rankings, I think Vandy is the top SEC team. I'm not necessarily buying it yet, as much as I like Mark Byington and what he's doing to Vanderbilt. Florida and Alabama are top 15, top 20 net ranking teams. I think Georgia is pretty high up in the rankings, but it's like I don't think the league is swimming with sharks like it was last year when you had to deal with Auburn and Alabama and Tennessee and Florida, all of whom were national championship good at their best and were at their best pretty often last year.
Well, I'm sure Kentucky fans, they can't be feeling good. You get blown out at home to Gonzaga, or I guess it was Gonzaga, and who just got blown out by 40 to Michigan. So, you know, I mean, if you're Kentucky, you can't be feeling good at all.
I think
we got a great chance to win our league. I really do. I think our league is there for the pickings, which we kind of need to do, honestly. So let's just hope they get it figured out. But anyway, even if we have to do one-on-one ball, we still can win. I mean, our guys are good enough, but it sure would make it easier if we started passing a little more. Anyway, thanks, guys. War Eagle.
Appreciate it, Pat. All right, we're running a little behind. Need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Don, you heading out?
No, I'll stay.
Okay, cool. All right. You just said you might sneak out a little early.
That's good.
All right, so good. We're all going to be here, at least as far as I know, when we come back for the final 20 minutes or so of the drive.
321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back. Wednesday edition of the drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Coach Don Dunn hanging out. Bill Cameron had to take a call. He'll be back in just a second. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. On the Drive Hotline, presented by Skybar. It's been a whirlwind these last couple of weeks, right? Auburn, goes from Thanksgiving was 2 weeks ago, and
tomorrow
from that point on, like you've had a new coach that people weren't really talking about as the likely candidate,
right?
Get the job. You've had I think Bill's on speakerphone and just walked by the door. You've had Auburn play a couple of huge basketball games, and you've had a lot of other things going on in the world of sports and the world of college football with the playoff field and all of the different high profile job openings there have been, including the one today, you know, with Michigan now possibly opening up,
and that could cause some. Ripple effect, whoever gets that job.
I got an off-the-board pick for you. You ready? I got an off-the-board Michigan pick.
Okay.
John Harbaugh. Not Jim. Ravens coach John Harbaugh, who's one of the longest tenured coaches in the league as far as at his current job.
Yeah.
But the season's not. I mean, up and down season for the Ravens. You know, I think he's. I don't know. I think there's. I would throw. Worked with his brother. You know, at different spots. He didn't work with his brother. Was a coach in his own right. You know, they both were sons of they're both Jack's kids. But
who saved the Western Kentucky program?
Yeah,
the dad
a guy you know a lot about Jack Harbaugh.
Yeah, they the brothers helped too with that. You know, they brought equipment. It was an amazing story if you ever get a chance to read how they were one vote from banning football. And this year they'll be, I think they're going to their like 13th out of 14th bowl game in the last 14 years.
Yeah, I mean, and Michigan could go in a lot of different directions. You know, recent winners at the college level, people with Michigan ties. Mm-hmm.
Saban.
You know, I'll tell you what, if the ending hadn't been so messy with Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
At LSU, I think that's a guy that would have a lot of the you know, he would check a lot of the boxes that Michigan could be looking at. But yeah, Nick Saban would be, boy, that'd be something. But yeah. No, I mean this is a place, and the guy I know who tends to know a lot about the Michigan program thinks DeBoer is a real candidate, especially if Oklahoma wins. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. We were talking a little bit about Michigan, Bill, and I said that a dark horse candidate is John Harbaugh, Jim's brother, with things going at the Ravens. And I think that if he wants to coach, he's in his early 60s. If he wanted to coach
I wonder if he'd want to go there when Jim had won the – had won a title. Just
maybe, but ago. I'll tell you what, if you want to pivot from the NFL to college.
Yeah. Not many better options you're going to have.
That's what I mean. And I think that's a name that would get Michigan people fired up.
You got a guy
with a Super Bowl ring and a NFL Coach of the Year award, mm-hmm. maybe coming to, you know, and ties to, and Jim's brother, sure. right? Like, I mean, I think there's multiple reasons there. I mentioned that if things hadn't been so messy at the end, Brian Kelly checks a lot of the boxes that Michigan would want in a head coach, but it's not going to happen, I think, because of the way it ended.
I would say probably not.
But you're right.
I mean, he's actually his part of the country.
Like if he was winning at LSU, but like just not enough. You know what I mean? If this was like an 8-4 season where he was kind of on the hot seat, I could absolutely, you know, that's a scenario where it's like, boy, it might be better off for everybody. If he were to make that move, probably not going to happen. Though. And I just checked in with my guy who's tapped in at Michigan, and he absolutely thinks that if this job is still open in a couple of in a week or two, and you know they could be waiting to see what happens in the Oklahoma Alabama game, and mm-hmm. DeBoer could be could be a candidate for this job. So I think there's that's an interesting thing to think about, and what a you know what a cherry bomb to drop like right in the piping of college football if Michigan goes and poaches another superpowers head coach at this stage in the game.
You're right. That would be explosive. Is exactly right. Hey, I wanted to mention something that I saw from the CEO of South Florida. He's athletics. They don't have an athletics director. They have the CEO of athletics, Rob Higgins, posting today about Byron Brown. We've talked about him, the nation's leader in total offense, by the way, this past year. For people that say, well, you know, don't know if that's the guy we want at quarterback. I can't imagine any school in the country not being interested in a guy that led the nation in total offense.
I'll let you read the statement from the CEO before I talk about Byron Brown.
All right, he posts Bulls Nation. We wanted to share that Coach Hartline and I continue to have great conversations with Byron Brown and his family about his future at USF. In the transparency and based off the recent coaching transition here, we mutually determined with Byron that it's best for him not to play in next week's Cure Bowl. This quick determination means that Gaston Moore is able to fully prepare and make the well-deserved start in his final collegiate game. Byron continues to attend every team activity, practice, and has been incredible in supporting his teammates as he always is, so much so that we've asked Byron to serve as a coach in the Cure Bowl to help us get our 10th win, which we're excited to share he's graciously agreed to do. We can't wait to finish the season strong and together while also supporting Coach Byron Brown and his family. Go Bulls.
Now, is this a trick to make him ineligible next year? Is there some rule where it's he becomes a university employee and now he can't
be anywhere else?
He can't, you know. Read the contract really carefully, Byron. But no, I think that there seem to be signs that maybe he could be playing somewhere else next year, whether it's in the NFL or playing for another team in college football. You know, if it were the NFL, I wonder if there'd be this kind of negotiation, or if that suggests he wants to be.
I would think they'd let him play in his final game if he were going to the NFL.
Yeah,
he would be playing in this game.
Sure, and well, if he wanted to. Like, yes. I guess, you know, there's if he were going to the NFL, there's the question of whether or not he would to participate in a bowl game. So he's got one of several
options.
He has options. He has decisions to make. It does seem like if you think he's playing college football next year and he's not playing for South Florida, it does feel very easy to draw the line between he would have to, and Coach, I'll ask you about this, like a quarterback who's making the jump from the American to a major conference, what are the benefits of going, and you only get 1 year, what are the benefits of last year's coach and last year's system are now at this new school, what, you know, versus picking a place where you might have to learn a lot of new stuff relatively quickly.
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. You go with your old coach. You just feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. Look at the guy at Vanderbilt. You know, they brought his coach.
Oklahoma.
And Oklahoma.
John Materia.
Yeah, and Pavier with the older gentleman that was the head coach.
Jerry Kill.
Kill, yeah. And he's very involved. If you see him on the sideline in the press box or wherever. Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. He'd come here.
I mean, it seems like
Florida is doing whatever they can.
Oh yeah, and I don't blame them, but you're waving an empty stick.
And if you didn't see, I'll tell you, if you didn't see much Byron Brown, this is going to date me a little bit because Coach, this gets me fired up as someone who got to see him play as a high schooler and as a college player and as a pro until he wrecked his knee multiple times this year. Commentators at USF games made comparisons between Byron Brown and Dante Culpepper. They say this is 6'2", 240, physical. makes every throw,
physical,
and lowers his shoulder into guys.
Yeah.
And that's if you're too young, like that's, you know, but what I couple of the best seasons, couple of the best seasons anyone's ever had in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, when he was with the Vikings, and then you know, excellent career at Central Florida.
Yeah, I think that's a good comp.
Yeah, but that's
all right. We've got to get to our final break. Slack, hang on, you're up. When we come back, as we wind things down here on the Wednesday Drive.
Auburn IT delivers professional IT support to
with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final few minutes, and let's get right to the phones. And Slack is next. Hey, Slack.
Hey, guys. Real quick, I keep hearing the stuff about the quarterback from USF. What would be the worst case scenario if we land him and they land Deuce, and all three receivers go with Deuce to South Florida?
that would be a problem. That would be a shock. That'd be a shocker for a couple of reasons, and I think one of them is the question of whether or not South Florida can match the money that those receivers have probably made over the last couple of years. But I want to see Deuce stay here and develop. But I don't know if I would turn down a guy that you think gives you a better chance to win next year just because you're committed to see Deuce Knight developing.
Well, not that, but you say about matching. What if it doesn't come down to a match? Because mm-hmm. Heartline has put 8 first round draft picks in the mm-hmm. NFL at wide receiver.
That is true. Although I did see Cam on the list of the 25 highest paid college players this past year, and I don't know that he'd be willing to take a pay cut.
But no, I think that's taking
a pay cut, but be a first round draft pick.
You know, I think South Florida, the hiring of Brian Hartline is going to give them a leg up in recruiting some of those skill players. I mean, they were doing a good job with it under Golish, but I don't think that's going to stop just because Golish is at Auburn now. I do wonder if they'll be able to land. Even with the promise of Hartline getting guys in the first round, I wonder if they'll be able to poach from the SEC or the Big Ten. But it's an interesting thought.
Really interesting. Yeah.
Good stuff, Slack.
A good one, Slack. Appreciate the call. We're just about out of time here on the Wednesday drive. Don, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Have a good visit with the family this weekend.
Okay, buddy. I'll see you week after next.
Yeah, we'll see you. Don will be out Friday.
He's got
some family Christmas thing going on. And Dan and I should be back tomorrow. Hopefully we'll catch up with Ferg as well. But that's going to do it for the Wednesday drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.